Hello, Herstorians. I'm your host, Heather Ashley, and welcome to another episode of Women of Herstory, a podcast dedicated to celebrating women who have made or are making their mark on our society. Here with me today is Target secret shopper, Tanner Jones Max. Goes by TJ Maxx sometimes.
Zoom, zoom, zoom.
Do you like ducks or geese?
I hate having to pick. This is one of my least favorite questions I get asked. Geese. Mm. Yeah, what about you?
Ducks? Yeah, I like geese are mean.
Yeah, they have like personal vendettas to work out.
Yeah. So you guys, after an unexpected week off, thank you all for your patience. We are back with a new episode. For today's Herstory lesson, we are going to be talking about Nobel Prize winner and the incredible researcher, Rita Levi-Montalcini, the neuroembryologist who co-discovered the nerve growth factor. So we're going to get real sciencey today. So on that note, I apologize if I wildly misrepresent what some of these things are in terms of research. I tried to do my best, but, you know, I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know all the things about science. Are you ready?
TJ's always ready.
I love it. Quote, "It was a very patriarchal society, and I simply resented from an early childhood that women were reared in such a way that everything was decided by the man." Rita Levi-Montalcini was born in Turin, Italy on April 22, 1909 with twin sister Paola. She had an older brother and an older sister as well. Her parents were Adamo Levi, an electrical engineer and mathematician, and Adele Montalcini, an expert painter, and by Rita's own description, an exquisite human being. The family's home life was, quote, filled with love and reciprocal devotion. Adele and Adamo were cultured and from an early age had instilled an appreciation of intellectual pursuit. Though under a traditional Victorian style of life, all decisions were made by the head of the family, the father and husband. Now, Rita made sure to say that her father loved and respected women, but believed that a professional career would interfere with her duties as a wife and mother. I know. This meant that Paola, Anna, and Rita would not engage in studies beyond finishing school, and certainly not in studies that would open the doors that would lead to a professional career. Yikes.
Yeah, no good. Red flag.
Yeah. Paola took after her mother and was a rather gifted artist. The path set by their father didn't interfere with her full-time dedication to painting. Eventually, she even became one of Italy's most outstanding women painters of the time. I want to do a little more research on her to, like, see if I can find any of her work anywhere. Probably can't.
Maybe we'll do, like, a series on, like, women painters.
That would be really cool.
Yeah.
Do a new deep dive into Artemisia or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And go further. Anyway, plans for season 4, guys. Keep it up. No, keep up with it.
Keep it up. Yeah, you better watch out. Keep it up. I'll give you a 4th season about art. Women art.
Rita had imagined herself a different place in society. At 20 years old, she realized she couldn't adjust to the, quote, feminine role laid out by her father. High school graduation usually led to marriage, not university. Quote, "I could have never done anything in particular if I had been married." Rita approached her father and asked permission to go into a professional career. She recalled later, quote, "He listened, looked at me with that serious and penetrating gaze of his that caused me such trepidation." Her father conceded and allowed Rita to pursue further education.
Well, I'm glad he did that.
I am too.
Also, trepidation, trepidacious.
Yeah.
Great word. Mm-hmm. Great words.
So many good words.
But going back, it I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad he didn't stunt her growth.
Say no and yeah. I'll disown you. I think it maybe for him, he hadn't... I mean, I think the very fact alone that she was willing to stand up to him and say, Dad, this is not... Like, you know me. You know me and that this is not a good path for me. This is what I should be doing. And I'm glad that he was able to put his own... what he had been taught, which was where women belong at, you know, he had been taught that they belong in the home. And I'm glad that he was able to say, maybe it doesn't work out for her. Maybe that's not where she should be.
I also wonder if he was just like, well, she might just do this anyway. So let me at least just give her my blessing.
Exactly.
I don't want to look like a jerk.
Well, it's also interesting to me, something, I know this episode is not about art. I promise I won't bring it up again. But the fact that art was one of the professions that was acceptable for Victorian women in particular. And yet, what Victorian women painters made it into the classical canon of art history? The answer is not very many. Moving on.
But we might do a couple episodes about those women, so stay tuned. Keep it up.
So, back to Rita. I digress. In just 8 months, Rita was able to fill the gaps that she had in Latin, Greek, and mathematics and graduated from high school.
Oh.
So she was like, yep, no, that's no problem. Oh, I got man. It. Don't worry, guys. We
oh,
got this.
Oh, she's smart.
I think I actually wrote that in my notes later.
She's smart.
Yeah. Initially wanting to be a philosopher, she decided she wasn't logically minded enough and entered medical school in Turin. Isn't that crazy? She's like, I would love to do philosophy, but I think her mind was a little too scientific to sit in posture, you know, that sort of theoretical. It's quite interesting. In 1936, Rita graduated from medical school summa cum laude with a degree in medicine and surgery. During her time in med school, she was drawn to a particularly eccentric professor named Giuseppe Levi. She became an intern at the Institute of Anatomy, and while there, she became increasingly adept in histology, in particular, staining nerve cells. He assigned her to figure out how the convolutions of the human brain are formed, tasking her with finding human fetuses in a country where abortion was illegal. Quote, the assignment was an impossible task to give your student or an established scientist. It was really a stupid question, which I couldn't solve, and no one could solve. She abandoned the project.
Wait, she really called it a stupid question?
Yeah.
Oh, God. That's how smart she was.
Yeah, she was like, this is so dumb. No one can figure this out. This is not real. Like, get what? She ended up abandoning the project and, with Giuseppe's permission, began to study the development of the nervous systems in chick embryos. So I think what's interesting, what seems to be a common thread, is she's like, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to try the thing that this man has asked me to do. She did it with her father. She's done it with Giuseppe. And then she's like, when I prove to them that it doesn't work, I can then say, hey, I have an idea because this is not working. This is the dumbest thing I've ever done in my life. And I find that a really refreshing, if not hysterical, approach to all these situations. Instead of digging her heels and being like screaming at him like, this is crazy, I'm not going to try to do this, she was like, okay, I'll give it a try. Yeah, I'll try. And when it doesn't work, we're going to do my thing, right?
It's at least nice of her to entertain his very stupid, flawed idea.
Rita enrolled in a 3-year specialization in neurology and psychiatry, as she was undecided on if she wanted to go into the practicing medical profession or researching neurology. She wasn't undecided for long as she continued these experiments with Giuseppe. Like, she was like, you know, I think I'm gonna go into the research side. Unfortunately, Rita was kicked out of school when Mussolini issued the, quote, Manifesto per la Difesa della Razza. I'm so sorry on my butchering, but, this manifesto doesn't deserve to be pronounced properly, so I'm okay with it.
Yeah, tell me what that Mussolini guy was all about.
So, it was signed by 10 Italian scientists, quote-unquote. The manifesto was followed in 1938 by laws barring academic and professional careers to non-Aryan Italian citizens.
Oh.
Rita was a Jew in fascist Italy. She spent time in Brussels as a guest of a neurological institute, but returned to Turin when there was word of an impending invasion of Belgium by the German army in the spring of 1940. Her family was now faced with two choices: emigrate to the United States, or find something that didn't need support or connection to the outside world. The family chose the latter. Rita built a small research unit at home and installed it in her bedroom. Inspired by a 1934 article by Victor Hamburger, where he reported the effects of limb extirpation on chick embryos. She made scalpels from sewing needles using an ophthalmologist's tiny scissors and a watchmaker's forceps.
Wait, do you mean to tell me that she had this
yes.
workshop at home?
In her bedroom.
She would have thrived during this pandemic.
During quarantine.
She would have found a new hobby every 2 weeks.
Not even just that. She would have solved all the world's problems.
She would have, oh my goodness.
I'm not even kidding.
She would have put out the coolest podcast. She would have done, some good news. It would have been, come on.
Look at all this new science I found.
It would have just been called, Look, Science. And then every week she's like doing a new science project for kids to do at home.
Incredible.
Anyway, I'm just spitballing. This is really, all of this to say, that's really unfortunate though that despite all of her promise and capability,
she was forced into this situation.
Yeah, like that's just the timing of global issues.
Especially to be
convenient.
On the side where it's directly affecting you. You are directly being persecuted.
Horrible.
And kept from bringing about goodness and to the world.
Ooh. Imagine being afraid or having to be fearful and then also just trying to do like X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that in like a normal state?
Right.
People struggle to do things regularly.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that in a heightened sense of fear?
Right. No, you're right. Yeah. I don't know how she did it because...
She's a boss, clearly.
She dissected the chick embryos and studied their motor neurons, the nerve cells responsible for controlling movement, and she did this using her little microscope. Her friend Giuseppe Levi... Yeah.
I'm sorry, you said dissecting frog.
Chick embryos.
You said dissecting. Sorry. I never dissected things in class.
You never dissected things? Are you kidding? Not even like an owl pellet?
No.
What?
I couldn't even tell you what an owl pellet looks like.
It's owl poop. It looks like this, an owl pellet is it's full of like rodent bones and stuff because that's what they eat. And so what we did, this was in like sixth grade, I think. We were all given a couple of owl pellets, and they're like the size of like a small ibuprofen bottle, like a small one. Most of them are anyway. And you like try to take the bones out. So what we did, we were trying to build little skeletons with the owl pellets. You never did that? We actually dissected a cat too in high school. And frogs. I'm so surprised.
We hardly had microscopes.
Oh.
We didn't even. This was bare bones. Mm. Shout out to New York City public school education system, though.
Kept
me out of trouble. I just didn't learn as much as a lot of other people did, apparently. But, what I lack in education, I make up for in street smarts.
Fair.
Street knowledge. Not even that.
No.
I mean, I know. I know nothing.
Rita's friend, Giuseppe Levi, escaped from Nazi-invaded Belgium and returned to Turin. joining Rita at the start of her research. So the timing fortunately worked out for them that she had only just begun her research. So he wasn't like coming in halfway through and she's like, nah, man, you can't be part of this. No. So
they're
like going
to give you all the credit if you show up halfway. No. You start at the beginning.
The two came up with a theory about embryonic nerve cells.
Oh.
That the embryonic nerve cells proliferated, started to grow, and then died. This ran in direct opposition to the model in Victor Hamburger's article that she was inspired by to conduct these experiments. This laid the foundation for the modern concept of nerve cell death as part of normal development. They couldn't publish in Italian journals because fascism, but the results were published in foreign journals in the early 1940s. Quote, I should thank Mussolini for having declared me to be of an inferior race. This led me to the joy of working. Not anymore, unfortunately, in university institutes, but in a bedroom. I know. Crazy. In 1941, Turin fell victim to heavy bombing from the Anglo-American Air Force, forcing Rita and her family to abandon the city and move to a cottage in the country. She rebuilt her mini laboratory and resumed experiments. Imagine your whole city is being bombed and you're like, well, let me pack up my science case. Gotta start this again. How do you have that level of dedication and focus? I'm pretty sure I would just sit and eat olives or something.
Clearly nothing was stopping her. So she was like, well, I'm just going to have to rebuild this somewhere else.
I wonder if it was like a purpose thing where she was like, I need to have a purpose if I'm already being literally hunted down. If I can find a purpose to keep me occupied and keep my mind from wandering, then I can...
Probably that too.
Yeah. I can function. Mm-hmm. I wonder if that was something.
Yeah.
Needing to find a way to acquire eggs for her experiments without money, she was able to convince the local farmers that she needed eggs for her children that were non-existent.
Wow.
With these fake children chicken eggs, Rita was able to continue to study how embryonic nerve tissue differentiates into specialized types. Did you like that? Fall of 1943 rolls around, and the German army has now invaded Italy. Rita and her family are once again tasked with abandoning their cottage and fleeing to Florence under false names, living underground until the end of the war.
Wow.
In Florence,
goodness.
Rita was actually able to have daily contact with friends and like-minded people. So luckily, they weren't like completely cut off. They were able, I guess, because of their assumed names, they were able to kind of skirt. You know, in 1944, the Allies forced the German invaders out of Florence. Rita was then employed at the Anglo-American headquarters. She was hired as a medical doctor and assigned to a camp of war refugees brought to Florence by the hundreds from the north where the war was still raging.
Woof. She's definitely going from like...
Just so...
She's going from like... Her own workshop office to, mm-hmm. like...
To...
I mean, she's a frontline... She's a frontline worker.
Wow. Wow. Epidemic infectious diseases and abdominal typhus spread death rapidly among the refugees, where she was in charge as nurse and medical doctor. The war ended in May 1945, and Rita and her family were finally able to return to Turin, where she resumed her academic positions at the university. In fall of 1948, Rita was invited by Professor Victor Hamburger to join him and repeat the experiments performed in the chick embryos at Washington State University in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, she's flying. She's getting a little change of scenery.
She is.
She's flying a little bit.
She later said that this invitation, quote, was to change the course of my life. only planning to stay in St. Louis for 10 to 12 months, the results of the research proved it imperative that she postpone her return to Italy and remain in Missouri, where she stayed for 30 years.
Yeah, I feel like when you start something as impactful as the work she was trying to do, you can't get out the game 10, 12 months in. This is something that takes, like, years in the making just to really, like, etch out, you know, your work.
Yeah, she eventually was able to obtain dual citizenship for Italy and the United States, so that's awesome. Rita was unsure of her future in research when she initially arrived in the U.S. Neurobiologists had thought that differences in the number of functions of various nerve cells were mostly a consequence of proliferative processes. Okay, so we're getting into a little fancy here.
Sounds jargon.
So she prepared a series of tissue slides of chick embryo spinal cords in different stages of development. She was able to observe the migration of nerve cells early in development to their final positions alongside the spinal column and saw the later elimination or pruning back of some of them. Quote, I put on a Bach cantata because I was so terribly happy. I had realized that there was still so much to be discovered.
That's remarkable that she was able to see the differentiation of the nerve cells. Just to notice
that. Like, what?
Like, different from the different stages.
Yeah, and then to notice what people hadn't before, which was then their later, like, dying off, their elimination. The fact that they're not just built and staying there. They're a nerve cycle, and it's a specific one.
Spare a thought for the process that it took in between her moving around and figuring this out. She's just like in the room. They've got the oil
outside.
The oil light.
It's probably a gas lamp at this point. The gas
lamp, right? So it's the gas lamp. Yeah, it's the gas lamp, and she's just like, it's like 2 a.m. She's like, come on, old girl, think. Put it together. What's the difference? Find it.
Are you picturing Jessica Fletcher?
Yes.
Oh,
yes. More, a little bit more sass. But basically, yeah. Jessica Fletcher.
In Hamburger's laboratory, she was able to search the trophic factor called sarcoma 180. A particular type of mouse tumor spurred nerve growth when implanted into the chick embryos. How do you even decide to implant a mouse tumor into a chick embryo? But I don't, again, I'm not a lawyer. I don't know a lot about science.
I have no idea either.
She figured out the cause. They named the substance in the tumor nerve growth factor, or NGF. It would cause similar cell growth in nerve tissue culture in the lab. Biochemist Stanley Cohen, a colleague at Washington University, was able to isolate NGF, a protein subunit, from the tumor. Sarcoma particularly purified the contained protein and nucleic acid. They added enzymes from snake venom, because, you know, science, which breaks down the compounds, in hopes to determine which component contained biological activity. The venom itself contained the factor. NGF was even produced in salivary glands in mice. Using this knowledge, they designed an anti-serum that was able to chart the role of the factor.
That's brilliant.
Okay, so why is...
That's cool.
I know. Crazy. So why is all of this significant? I will do my best to explain. NGF was the first of many cell growth factors scientists would find in animals. This gave scientists a new way to study neural growth and potentially battle disorders of neural degeneration like dementia and Alzheimer's disease. It is a potential therapeutic target in cancer and could help treat multiple sclerosis, making it a potential factor in various psychiatric disorders like schizophrenia and autism as well. Quote, it is imperfection, not perfection, that is the end result of the program written into that formidably complex engine that is the human brain. and of the influences exerted upon us by the environment and whoever takes care of us during the long years of our physical, psychological, and intellectual development. Oof. Oof. Oh, she just speaks poetry. She makes science sound like poetry.
Yeah.
And it is. It is. It's a dance. Everything I just described, I can, like, picture all of it. It's like choreography. Dr. Gerald D. Fishback, a neuroscientist and professor emeritus at Columbia, said, quote, "I don't use these words easily, but her work revolutionized the study of neural development, from how we think about it to how we intervene." In 1956, Rita was offered a position of associate professor at Washington University and 2 years later, full professor.
Yes.
A position she held until retirement in 1977. In 1962, she established a research unit in Rome, beginning her stint of dividing her time between there and St. Louis. So she was like, so I'm going to be a professor, but also...
What a change of scenery. Like, you're in Rome, and then you're like, all right, next stop.
St. Louis.
St. Louis. No offense to St. Louis. That's just a completely different change in scenery and environment. Language.
From 1969 to 1978, Rita was the founder and first director of the Institute of Cell Biology of the Italian National Council of Research in Rome. Here comes the big kahuna. Rita won the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 1986 with Dr. Cohen for the discovery of the bodily substance that stimulates and influences the growth of nerve cells. Scientists had no idea how embryo cells built a latticework of intricate connections to other cells before she began studying chick embryos. Just, oh my gosh. I just don't have that type of brain, so I cannot fathom the ability to see something so small, like in a chick embryo, and be like, this is going to help us know more about dementia. What?
And we have...
To see that.
We
oh
have
gosh.
The technology and the, you know, resources to figure that out a little bit more quicker these days, but like... I imagine going in as, you know, how she was approaching it, which is like almost blind,
mm-hmm.
you know, definitely not as much information.
Oh my gosh.
Then as
literally in a makeshift lab with
yeah.
no funding initially, you know, like
she's very deserving of that Nobel Peace Prize
like,
for Nobel Peace Prize in physiology or medicine.
Yeah. Crazy. In a later interview, Rita recalls what she was doing when she got the news. She was pages from the end of Agatha Christie's Evil Under the Sun.
There you go.
Quote, "At the moment that I was finding out about the criminal, they told me that I was awarded the Nobel." During this particular interview, she actually got up to go get the book, and it had a handwritten note on the second to last page where she marked, "Call from Stockholm." And then she said, quote, "So I was very happy about it, but I wanted much more to know the end of the story."
Always.
So it's so funny that we were mentioned Jessica Fletcher earlier.
Always. Always want to find out the end of an Agatha Christie story. That takes precedent.
Dr. Cohen said she had a combination of intuition, passion, and biological knowledge. Quote, "She had this feeling for what was happening biologically. She was an intuitive observer, and she saw that something was making these nerve connections grow and was determined to find out what it was." In 1987, Rita was awarded the National Medal of Science, and in 1988, her autobiography was published, In Praise of Imperfection. What a title.
That's a good title.
That is such a good title. Rita spent the latter part of her career making sure other scientists had access to funds, equipment, and support. Quote, "The only way to help is to give young people a chance for the future." She founded the European Brain Research Institute in 2002 and established the Rita Levi Montalcini Foundation to provide African women, quote, "with the tools for a full development of their capabilities." I love that she had... no, you know, funds equipment and support initially. She's literally living in, she was being persecuted. And she was like, I don't want anybody else to ever have to go through that. Instead of being like, well, I had to go through it. So you, you know, I, why should I make it easier for you? No, she was like, I have the ability now to do this.
She's a gate opener, not a gatekeeper.
Exactly. In 2001, she received one of Italy's highest honors, Senator for Life, and it was a role that she did not take lightly.
Senator for Life.
Mm-hmm. In 2006, at the age of 97, she held the deciding vote in Italian Parliament in a budget dispute. She threatened to withdraw her support unless the government reversed its decision to cut science funding. They put the funding back in, and the budget was passed. Despite the opposition's attempts to silence her by mocking her age.
What?
It's like, excuse you, sit, take many seats, my friend, take many seats. A few years later, she said, quote, at 100, I have a mind that is superior, thanks to experience, than when I was 20.
At 100, I hope I can formulate that thought at 100. I hope I'm alive to see, like, 75. All that's to say, she definitely has lived several lives of worth of experiences.
Mm-hmm. Rita was the first woman elected to the Pontifical Academy of Sciences. She was the author or co-author of dozens of research studies. Rita died on December 30th, 2012, at the age of 103. What?
I can't imagine the ever-changing, how she felt about the ever-changing world.
I think she loved it. I think she embraced it.
She saw so much that's so aggressive.
Yeah.
What a life. Like, she lived in some of the most tumultuous times.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She got to see Obama elected. That's good, though. That's nice. All right.
I'm going to leave you guys with this quote in which she is referencing her Nobel Prize. I can do a lot of things that are very important, which I would never have been able to do if I did not receive it. It has given me the possibility of helping a lot of people. Wow.
I think that's that really...
Instead of saying, I've worked so hard, I went through so much... She's like, well, now I have it, and I can do so many things for people in my community that I couldn't do before.
It encapsulates the kind of person that she is.
A freaking person.
Yeah.
What a person.
Yeah, very selfless. You know, always
driven,
thinking about other people or, like, you know, the next thing. Yeah.
Not brilliant. Not
slowed down by... you know, the war.
Yeah, no, she was just like,
I'm going to build all these home, at home oh, workshops.
At home lab. Yeah. I'm going to pause. Thank you, historians, for tuning in again. Subscribe, follow, tell your aunt's new neighbor. Come back this Friday for an interview with art curator Lynn Dougherty. In this interview, she discusses the mission behind her newly formed Unnamed Road Gallery and the gallery's second show featuring three amazing artists in the LA area.
I wish I could go to LA.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm afraid of flying.
Yeah.
I'll get over it.
Yeah, you'll get over it.
We'll get over it.
Yeah.
I'll get over it. I have to work it out.
But it's amazing. So make sure you come back this Friday for that. And she will be giving all kinds of details surrounding specifics. If you're in the California area, Las Vegas area, and I know I say California area as if you could, like, pop down from San Francisco, but, you know.
If you're there.
You know, if you find yourself in that area.
If you're floating a boot.
Yikes. Nope.
Oh.
Moving on.
Cut that.
Follow us on social media on Instagram.
At Women of Her Story Podcast.
Twitter.
At The Her Story Pod.
TikTok.
At Women of Her Story.
Facebook.
Women of Her Story.
And visit our website at
ofherstory.com/survivor.
/ Jeff Probst and Feff.
At me.
Until Friday, be safe, stay healthy, and show the world what you're made of.
Have a great Valentine's Day weekend day.
Woo!
Love.
Love is in the air.